Bear Down Bears fans, we're still here. Yes, we're still here. We're not going anywhere. We will continue to cover the Bears, unlike the Bears who continue to cover nobody. Pat the Designer, Courtney Cronin in the building. It's bad, Courtney. It's really, really bad right now. We want to hit on, you know, kind of where we're at with this coaching staff. Do the players believe in them? A lot of us saw the article as well about possibly cleaning house. I don't know if we're there, but maybe we need to start looking at Kevin Warren for some answers. You brought us such an interesting topic on the Bears cycle from a tweet we saw, so we'll talk about that as well. And then Darnell Wright over Jalen Carter, how we feel about that, all that more in today's episode of the Chicago Bears podcast. Let's jump right in. Hit the like button, subscribe to the page. This episode brought to you by the Hard Rock Casino, Northern Indiana. Courtney, how are you?
I'm good. I think that it's nice to come back and know that, you know, you don't have to go on the road this weekend, and you get to see how this team fares against another really not so good team right now in the Denver Broncos. Like, it's weird that you're in this spot, but that's a measuring stick game to be like, all right, just how far have the Bears fallen? How much have they taken a step back by facing a team that gave up 70 points last week to the Miami Dolphins? And yes, this may be the best offense we've ever seen. They did that without Jaylen Waddle, who was in the concussion protocol, but they still gave up 70 points. So whether this game actually becomes super interesting because it's two not so great teams going at it and who's worse than the other bad team, I guess that's what we're looking at here in week four. But my goodness, I mean, 4 weeks in, not even a full quarter of the season officially, and we're already talking about next year. We're already talking about draft positioning. We're talking about Caleb Williams. I definitely want to like pump the brakes a little bit, but there's a lot we have to unpack still about the direction this team's going and some areas I think that haven't been talked about nearly as much as the quarterback and his regression.
Yeah, let's start it off here because I want to bring out, right, how does this team – how much does this team really trust the coaching staff that's in place? And I'm talking about on both sides, right? Because in week three, we got to see the second week of Matt Eberflus not only being the head coach, but being the play caller on defense. Through 3 weeks, he's now called it, the defense for 2 weeks of the season. This is what we've seen. Bears ranked 31st in points allowed per game, 35.3. Bears defense ranks 29th in yards allowed per game, 407. Passing yards allowed per game, 29th, 285. Rushing yards allowed per game, 19th. Moving in the right direction, maybe. 121. Third down conversion, 32nd. Teams are completing 60% of their third downs. Most of these are third and eights, by the way. Yeah. In sacks, we rank 32nd. Which one was your favorite? There's only one to choose from.
There's the unique Ngakoue one. That's,
It's so bad. And I asked this question, right? The principles I've asked about a couple of times, the hits principle, does this team really believe in it? Because it seems as though a defense, even with as bad as we've seen offenses in Chicago, we've seen the defense buy into what the coaches have talked about here. When Lovie Smith was here, they bought in. They fought for Lovie. They did everything they could. We're not seeing that here. Does this team really believe in the coaching staff that's in place?
The hits principle itself. I remember thinking this last year when Eberflus gets hired, and we had heard a little bit about this in Indianapolis when he was a defensive coordinator there, that there was this acronym that he lived by and that his players bought into. And even in Indianapolis, the last couple of years, that's been a bad football team and a team that has had coaching changes and quarterback changes and a lot of turmoil. They still maintained some sense of normalcy and stability and stasis on the defensive side of the ball. And you can look at Matt Eberflus and what he installed there, his system, having more talented players. All those things played out into this hits principle concept becoming something that they lived by. A defense predicated off of turnovers, and then, of course, all the other elements you see, the hustle intensity, and then playing smart is the end point of hits principle on top of takeaways. But like the number, the T in hits principle, the number one thing you can actually judge it by is non-existent in Chicago. Their first takeaway, their first turnover, whatever you want to call it, that was in the third quarter when Jack Sanborn, you know, picked off. Who was even playing at that point? Was it Blaine Gabbert?
Blaine Gabbert.
It was definitely
Blaine
not Patrick Gabbert. Mahomes.
Yeah, I thought we had a Jaguars game breakout in the middle.
Yeah, like that's for that, I remember asking Jaquan Brisker about that after the game. Like, are you a little surprised that the first interception for this defense came three games in, almost 2.5 full games in the books, like the third quarter of this game? Like, I'm so like miffed by that alone. But yeah, I remember going back last year to asking Jalen Johnson at the podium during OTAs about the hits principle. And, you know, it sounds kind of collegey. It sounds kind of gimmicky. And what he thought of it, and he said, kind of like reiterating what a lot of guys believe, he was the one to call it out when I said, you know, kind of comes across as this like college football rah-rah thing. He's like, it's 100% that it can be kind of this corny thing, but if you buy into it, you know, there's clearly something that guys believe in. Now is when you can really gauge whether the hits principle is just going to go out the window with everything else, and guys are going to just, you know, kind of rely on what they know and, you know, fall back on their instincts, or if this is going to be something that can carry them through this really, really rough stretch of the season. Because it sounds great when you're winning. These cool, cutesy things like that, you know, these belief points that the team has where we are all bought in together. We all play, we all hustle, we all play smart. We practice based on intensity, and that the defense has a lot of takeaways. When those things don't show up, is the hits principle null and void, which then plays into, do these players actually believe that the coaches have their best interest at heart and that they're putting players in position to succeed?
Yeah, and I think that the worst part of it all is, yes, it's corny, it's cheesy, it's collegey, gimmicky, right? It's Deion Sanders giving speeches at Colorado, and it works for those kids, right? But at the basis of it, you're telling your players to hustle, be intense, get takeaways, and play smart. We're not even seeing those simple things that are not corny and cheesy in the NFL. In fact, they're very vital to you being a good defense. And I think that there's some sort of disconnect there, because at a minimum, as a defensive coach, the defensive players usually feel like, he's going to have our back. We're going to have his. We're going to go out here and fly around on the field. The issue for me with what we saw on Sunday, yes, there's a portion of it where Jaquan Brisker goes out, Tremaine Edmonds goes out, TJ Edwards, right? Like, we lose a ton of bodies. But I'm not even seeing the backups come in and display those principles. I'm not even seeing the guys who are trying to show, hey, coach, I can be a better player on this team. I can be a number one. Terrell Smith, I'm not seeing those guys go out there and exude these principles. And that's where I start to look at the coaching staff, and I'm saying there's a disconnect between the message that you're preaching and what your players are putting out on the field, system aside.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that stretch last season. And I'm just going to like pick at the defense here from, you know, the end of this, you know, live from the bye week on. So they gave up, it was Philly coming out of the bye week. I wanted to pull these stats up really quick. So they gave up 112 rushing yards. Okay, it's Philadelphia, eventual, you know, Super Bowl team. That's fine. Yeah. 254 the week after the Buffalo Bills, 265 to the Detroit Lions, and then 141. Like, they were making business decisions at that point. And that's also when they're giving up 300 passing yards, 239, 341 to the Minnesota Vikings and their backups. Like, you know, that's effort. That's telling you, like, we care or we don't. And I go back to a quote from Matt Eberflus this past weekend in Kansas City, where he was talking about, he was asked about the players. Like, obviously you think you have talented players, otherwise you would not have spent, you know, the kitchen sink on two off-ball linebackers. Like, clearly you think there's talent there. So logically, you got to ask about coaching and like what the problem is. And he said that in terms of the scheme they're running, what they're doing, they're charged with putting players in the best position to execute and develop players at the same time. If they're not doing a good enough job of that, then you as a head coach have to take a look at what your coach is. They're supposed to be carrying out your system.
Yeah.
Maybe the system is broken, and that's me like speaking rhetorically, because we know, you and I have both talked about this ad nauseum, there's a lot wrong with this defense. There's a lot wrong with this scheme, and that's on the head coach to determine. You know, they're going to have the easiest place that they can do this would be after the mini bye that they get week five going into week six, because they've got Washington on Thursday Night Football next week. You got to make some changes. You got to do what you did offensively last year between week six and week seven, where you used the 10 days in between games to try to fix things. Because the way that it's being coached right now, there is some massive disconnect that is just not, there's not 53 players who are just like god awful and the worst talent in the NFL. You have 53 players on this roster. You can't tell me that they're all awful and that it's just like the scheme is perfect and they can't carry it out. The best coaches are the ones who can put ego aside, who can put their system aside and adapt and learn on the fly. It's hard for them too, probably, to teach something that you might not be as familiar with if you've been running the same defense for, I don't know, more than a decade now in the NFL.
Yeah.
Like, you have to adjust too, where it's on the coaches to figure out, are we not teaching it correctly? And are there things within the scheme that we can adjust to our player strengths, both on the defensive side of the ball and on the offensive side of the ball?
I think the thing is too, right? You say, when you said in there, he goes, not that Matt Eberflus said it, but we think that they have good players. This isn't a think thing anymore. I know Tremaine Edmonds is good. Mm-hmm. I've seen it. I know TJ Evers is good. I've seen it. I know Yannick Ngakoue is elite at what he does. I've seen it. And so DJ Moore, kind of the same thing. You really can't say that much about the rest of the guys on the offensive side. But like DJ Moore, I know is an elite wide receiver. I look at that and I say, why are they broken with you? It's not to say it's not on the players at all. And I'm not absolving the players of the effort that they put in on the field, because I think through 3 weeks, we've seen a team that seems basically that they can't be bothered to go out there and hustle. The first word in the hits principle. But I know that these players have talent. What's going on that makes you not able to utilize that talent? And I wonder, here's something that I don't know if I can put this on Justin, but is there a leader in the locker room that's just not buying in that makes the rest of the team go, eh? Because I saw Justin at the end of that game. We see him go through. Bears get obliterated, right? And he's shaking hands with everybody, and everybody's still right there. They look like we'll get it together. We got it. Don't worry about it, Justin. We're here. But when I see Justin on the field, I'm like, that don't even look like hits principle to me. That doesn't look intense. That how you drop back, all of that. Is there a lack of leadership from the player side of things as well, or a lack of buying in from the leaders on the player side of things that maybe is leading to what we're seeing on the field?
I noticed something 4 minutes and 20 seconds to go in the game. The offense was out there. And this is after, remember, Fields came back in from, you know, looking pretty woozy. I was surprised. Yeah. And I don't know, Matt Eberflus kind of took exception to that question when I asked him about that, and then followed up yesterday. Like, look, we did nothing wrong. Like, he's all cleared. Like, whatever. Yeah. There was some weird, you're like reading between the lines there of maybe regretting that decision, even though he came out healthy. But anyways, Fields was in the game and the entire defense is sitting on the bench. And usually, like, you know, I get it. Human nature ends up taking over in a lot of situations. Guys, when you're getting your ass kicked, it's really difficult to stay completely locked in. And this wasn't just an ass kicking. It was a colossal one, because absolutely, they were down 38 at this point. And the entire defense, as I'm looking at them across the field from the press box, they just look dejected. The body language told you, can we just get this thing over with? Can they just run the ball at this point? And to be fair, when the defense was back out on the field in the final, you know, couple minutes of that game, the offense was all sitting on their sideline too.
Yeah.
I'm not at all saying it's offense versus defense and they think one thing or the other, but just like that collective, like, resignation to the fact that this is a long, long journey that they're on, and one that is not going to be easy. Like, literally no part of this, even things that should be further along, like, it's like the everything is a calculus test at this point for this team, that they just can't even, all they can do is write their name on the paper, and that's all they know right now. It's really difficult. And so you got, like, the leaders in this locker room are the guys that we know are cornerstones of this team. Justin Fields right now, we don't know if he's a long-term cornerstone of this team. He certainly doesn't look like it, but he's the guy that guys will follow, and no one's ever going to question him in that sense. But then who else is it? Is it Jalen Johnson? Is it, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, DJ Moore is not a vocal leader. That is not who he is, but he is a lead by example guy. When you don't even get him in position to lead by example, what do guys have to look at? I mean, Cole Kmet, is still going to be one of the faces of this team, but there's just not that sense in there where you have guys that are like, have somebody's like, all right, just stick with me. We're going to get through this. We're going to get to the other side of this. Like it feels like a lot of this. And I remember asking a couple players about this, and I asked Komet, I was like, do you feel like this team is lost right now? And he said he didn't want to use the word lost, but it was a situation where he felt like this team had a lot to, like, you know, a lot to get through. And even Eberflus said the other day, when he was asked about like how this locker room responded to the Alan Williams thing last week and sticking together, he said that this locker room was tight before, and they've really got to be tight now, because this is the batten down the hatches sort of moment for the Bears, because the wheels are off. And now it's like the thing's going to tip over and everybody's going to fall out if they're not, you know, if there's not some sort of foundation that they can hold on to. Because when you are in a losing situation like this and the writing is on the wall, players may be insulated from things, Pat, but they also know, coaching staff, if this thing continues on, that entire group is probably out of there next year. Yeah. That they, as players, might not be there either. If you're in a situation like a Jalen Johnson, it's a contract year, and maybe you don't want to be here anyways. I don't know. He's never given us any indication to think that he doesn't want to. I don't know if his opinion would change because of what's going on right now. But players who are fighting for getting paid, getting second contracts, like... If things don't turn around, there's going to be a lot of dreams that go out the window here, not just from people who were hired to guide the direction of this place, but the players who are tasked with carrying out those very directives. And it could go very south very quickly. And I know what the Bears have been saying, that they're a very tight team, that they are all unified in this, but we have seen this play out before where guys say that, but behind the scenes, things are coming apart at the seams. You can even look at it last year. I pull up that example in my brain right now of, I think it was Justin Jones and Dominique Robinson who talked about the D-line room, that at one point last year, it was just so far gone that you had guys who didn't want to be there. And you want to be around players who want to be there, but it's difficult when things are going so poorly and nobody feels like they have direction. They've got to find direction pretty quickly. Otherwise, you're headed for a repeat of that this season.
I think that brings on this question, and let's jump in the second quarter, brought to you by the Hard Rock Casino, Northern Indiana. You can still see John Mulaney and Pete Davidson at Hard Rock Live Friday, October 6th. Tickets are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. The real question I think a lot of Bears fans are wondering is, when do we go to the adult in the room, right? This feels like the kids running the playpen at this point. And it seems like the adult in the room should be Kevin Warren. When do we start to look to Kevin Warren for some answers on this team? Or is this just kind of one of those things that it's all going to play out through the season and then Kevin Warren's going to bring down the hammer?
You know, Kevin got here in January, and the first thing that was supposed to be already handled by now, or at least we were supposed to have more clarity on, was the stadium. Like by the 6 months in, he was saying that we should have had some answers. And this is going back to January last year. They're running into roadblocks with that. So that was supposed to be his major thing on his plate for year one. And then having a chance to evaluate what the team, how the team operates, the people making the decisions from the coaching staff to front office, and the overall direction of the team before stepping in and saying, let's change this, let's keep this the same, let's alter this, let's move these people out of their roles and bring these people in. Would that get expedited based on how bad things get here? And if the Bears become a laughingstock nationally? Honestly, I don't know, because you can't, it's really difficult to bring people in midseason, which is why when people are like, fire the coaching staff, fire Flus,
it's not realistic.
Who are you going to bring in to do those jobs? You can promote from within, but those people probably aren't staying around for next season. And I think it's a situation where Kevin is going to make a very calculated decision here to watch this thing play out, to see, like, now's your chance. If you want to impress this person who is one of the most powerful men in sports and has built winning organizations as a president and CEO, and, you know, been with the Minnesota, been with the Rams, certainly with the Big Ten, like, now's your chance to show I'm vital to staying around beyond the 2023 season because I helped the turnaround. I helped keep this thing stable when there was no stability. Like, so I don't think Kevin Warren's somebody who is going to step in right now and just start firing people if like this losing streak goes from 13 games to 20 games. But he's watching. Like, make no mistake about it. There might not be any moves, at least the reactionary ones right now. But it wouldn't surprise me if like there was a lesser move, like a coordinator change at some point, even though they've already lost a coordinator. But as far as head coach and all those things, it usually has to be something like so terrible that like the Titans situation last year when they fired their GM in season.
Yeah. And I don't even think that, you know, I'm expecting that. It's just one of those things of okay, what are you going to do to help right this ship? And I get it, right? Mm-hmm. The number one thing on his plate right now is the stadium. But realistically, I didn't bring you here to be Ted Phillips if I'm George. And that's how I'm looking at it, right? And I think that's the biggest difference for Bears fans out there who are like, it's the same. We're going to be down the same. No, we're not. Like, I can guarantee you this. Kevin Warren's not going to let us go down the same path. As long as the McCaskies don't, like, step in and hit us with, you know, we like this guy. We like the setup that he has, blah, 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 and kind of meddle in that area. This is not a Ted Phillips situation where he's back there making sure that every penny is counted. This is a real leader in football who has been a part of real successful moments in football. So I think that this season may turn into whatever it's going to turn into. I would like to hear a little bit from him to say, hey, you know, is there something you can do to help? Is there some direction you can give these guys? But realistically, I don't expect this to last very long, knowing how Kevin Warren is. Not saying an in-season change is coming, but if this continues, we'll be talking about new people in the building next year.
And you don't want to be reactionary to an 0-3 start. Yes, I know the losing streak from last year makes it 13 straight games, but you know, even in my crisis communication mind that I'm trying to put on right now, it would feel very reactionary to jump out in front of this. Like, you don't want to undermine the general manager of this football team who reports to you. You are his boss. Ryan Poles coming out last week, addressing the Justin Fields situation, giving us a little bit on Alan Williams, but not much, but like just addressing the chaos, that this team went through last week. Like, that was his chance to show Kevin Warren how he handles the building when it's proverbially on fire.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would have been it would have been a bad look had Kevin Warren in a way, obviously he's working behind the scenes. The guy has been through, you know, look at the crisis that they went through with the Big Ten with canceling the season during the COVID year and then having to like walk that back. He's been through these things before, but I just think it was a smart play for him. Like, let his general manager handle it. It's his football team. He's been here longer. He knows, you know, he knows kind of what he wants to do and what his vision is before, like, it almost be, and I'm trying to find another word on the fly. Like, you don't want to like emasculate the situation and be like, you know, kind of,
you don't want to undermine him. You don't want to undermine him. Yeah. I get that. I don't know. I guess we're all looking for answers on this, right? And so it's just like, all right, Ryan doesn't seem to have any. Flus definitely doesn't seem to have any. Maybe Kevin does. But it's the one thing with all of this that, again, I reiterate this to Bears fans. This is not the same path we were going down. You will see if this continues the way that it does, and I'm not calling for this. I'm not saying that people's jobs need to be on the line. But the reality of football is you finally have somebody in there who's a real football mind. Mm-hmm. Who's made real football executive decisions. And he's just taking all of this in and waiting to see what the final results are. There will be changes if this continues. And I think, right, even the difference that Bears fans probably aren't used to is even if there is success, because of how that success may look, there still could be changes that come into play with this team.
Of course. And that's why I think Kevin Warren is not quick to jump into, wow, the building's on fire. Like, let's fire everybody. Yeah. Because then what are your alternatives? You still have to get through 14 more games and then make a decision. Yeah. Like, I don't think that he's not somebody who's reactionary and just like quick to pull the plug on things. And I know people go back and say, well, what about the COVID season at the Big Ten? I think that was a massive learning experience for him in the highest role he had had at that point of his career as a commissioner of the Big Ten to, understand doing things differently, to understand making sure you have everything, all the possible information, even in situations that feel like, you know, there's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of unknowns with this team. We don't know how this team's going to climb out of an 0-3 hole or when the losing streak's going to stop. We don't know how Justin Fields is going to respond. We don't even know if he's the answer at the position. Right now, he doesn't look like it, but this all feeds into, from Kevin Warren on down, this team cannot afford to make rash decisions, because once you make a stark decision that only has one outcome, or like one or zero, benching Justin Fields, for example, because I've seen that conversation play out a lot of different places. Like, it's the nuclear option. And this is not a team that can afford to make those sorts of moves, whether it's coaching staff, whether it's decisions about personnel, whether it's anything, because going the other way, like, you have to make sure you are dead set, and Kevin Warren's part of that, on whatever it is, you stick with it, you live with it, and it ends up being the right decision down the road, and not one that you look back and say, man, I wish we could have done that one differently, because they can't afford to have any do-overs in that sense.
No, and I think the main thing with all of that is, right, once you make that decision, you're stuck. Mm-hmm. You can't go back to Justin. You're out on Justin.
He would request a trade at that point. I have no doubt in my mind about that. He would not be on this team much longer.
Let's jump in, because I think that that is such a key topic to transition with here, because you talk about the cycle that we've seen. Mm-hmm. And this tweet was so elite. You brought this to my attention when we jumped on. Shout out to Justin Fields, the Bears _26. Mark Trestman got fired. We were left with Cutler. Hired Fox. Fox wanted a new QB. We go get Trubisky. Fox got fired. Hired Nagy. Nagy wanted a new QB. We go get Fields. Nagy gets fired. Hired Eberflus. You are here. Matt wanted a new QB. Who do we get? Matt Eberflus get fired. Who gets hired? I think that this is an elite way to talk about the Chicago Bears football team. Now, there's some nuance in there, but at the end of the day, this is the Bears cycle. Mm-hmm. How do we end it, Courtney?
Yeah, it's like reading that, and so a couple people sent me that yesterday. Like, it shows you how many times this team is stop, start with organizational changes in terms of coaching, in terms of general managers, and then with the quarterbacks. And it's hard to get it right. I think that people need to, like, let's use the Jets for an example here, because I keep hearing about this, and we talked about this on Around the Horn today. Like, Joe Namath coming out and saying, like, get rid of, Zach Wilson. I don't think they should keep him. Okay, nobody's saying long-term they think they should keep him, but, like, you can't just get rid of him now. You can't just make...
You let go of Mike White.
You can't make stark changes in season. Like, there's windows for this. And I think with the Bears, like, the situation that they find themselves in right now, like, and this is, and who knows how it's going to play out. It doesn't look like the coaching is very good, and that this team is being, you know, put in the best position to succeed. And it also doesn't look like the quarterback is very good either, and that he's the answer at the position. All right. So let's say, like, fans who really want this to hit the reset button get to do it right now. What would the realistic, like, way to do that would be? Use your number one overall pick, because right now they're in position. He'll be fighting with Arizona. I mean, Arizona beat Dallas. I understand that. But, like, there's some weird things that happen in September anyways. Like, the Bears will be in position, let's say, get Caleb Williams, and they can go out and get a head coach. Well, what do you want the head coach to be? You want the head coach to be an offensive-minded head coach. But there's no way to guarantee that that's going to succeed. The Bears had that with Mitchell Trubisky. When John Fox gets fired, okay, bring in Matt Nagy, somebody who had been with Patrick Mahomes, somebody who can run this system. And now you've got a quarterback who showed no signs of improvement beyond that first year, actually showed very similar signs of regression to what we're seeing from Justin right now. So it's hard when you really don't have the time. And I know that Ryan Poles, given the vote of confidence from the McCaskies of a long-term rebuild. Well, now you're starting to see, like, how long a long-term rebuild could be. That could be like 3 years at the very most before you have to pull the plug and, like, start over, which, if you can't get past for the first level above the ground floor, that's where this team is consistently building. All right, nope, move on. Whether it's at the quarterback position, whether it's at the head coach position, and or the front office too. But it's a tough spot to be in, because you can see how this thing is going to play out if they continue to lose games, which would be a new coaching staff. And typically, anytime you have a coaching staff that either you have an offensive-minded head coach, the course correct the next time around is to, unless you have like a young quarterback that you're trying to develop, it's usually, all right, an offensive head coach who gets fired, then go hire a defensive head coach. That's exactly what happened going from Matt Nagy to Matt Eberflus. But it's a scary, when you see it laid out like that, that shows you like kind of how difficult this has been. And Bears fans have lived through this, but to get it right, to have it all time up all at once, like that is a very, very challenging proposition here that they've just failed at time and again.
Yeah. And I think the thing is too, right? Like now you're in a situation where you got to go, you're not only talking about going to find the offensive mind, you're talking about going to find the offensive play caller that all of a sudden in one season, if you do this again, makes Justin Field, you're hoping for the Mike McDaniel situation, right? Tua was terrible. Everybody knew he was terrible. Nobody believed in him. Mike McDaniel shows up. He's like, nah, I can fix that. And he fixed it. And now they're beating teams 70-20, which is insane. But that's the situation that you're hoping for if you make a change here. But that's just flip-flopping it again, right? Yeah. It's just, okay, we go get Ben Johnson to be the next head coach, or you go get Eric Bieniemy to be the next head coach, right? And it's all of a sudden there's this vote of confidence. Maybe the offense hits for a year. I actually think that how Ryan Poles is going about this is the right way. Now, maybe Flus is the guy. Maybe he isn't the guy. I hope that he is the guy. I hope that he sticks around because I really do like Flus. I just want to see him do more with my football team. But I think the thing is that you have to build this team so that it can insulate these issues. The one thing I look at with San Francisco is all the players are there. You got the right system. You can swap whatever quarterback you want in there. Mm-hmm. And now things start to work. That's the goal that the Chicago Bears are trying to achieve here. And that's why I think, right, like when you're talking about this Bears cycle, there may be one more shift that continues in this cycle, but you have to have the players on the field no matter what to make the right play. And I like that at a minimum, Ryan Poles is focusing on, okay, we got to go out and get these players. We've got to build through the draft. It's not reactionary like we saw from Ryan Pace, like we've seen before, of I have to make a huge trade and go get the big fish to fix all of this.
Well, you got to look at his track record too. Like right now, it's not looking great in terms of those big name acquisitions and ones that didn't work out. Like his first major move is trading Khalil Mack. And I understand like why he did that at the time, and it signaled the roster teardown. It signaled that everything from there on out would end up being, you know, skewed towards the quarterback. But like, you know, everything else in there too, whether it's, you know, from Larry Ogunjobi to guaranteeing, you know, picking up all those guarantees for Alex Leatherwood, you know, PJ Walker, if Chase Claypool doesn't work out, if Darnell Wright, like, of course, like we said this during the draft, that Darnell Wright sandwiched in between Jalen Carter and Peter Skoronski
is going to always keep
you. You're always going to be looking at how the guy did ahead of you and how the pick you could have had. And that's the only reason that one comes into play, because they traded back from 9-10. You're always going to be judging what your pick did in comparison to those guys. And Poles right now really can't afford, I think, in a lot of ways to have any more of those things add up to where people can point out, hey, how did that one work out? This one didn't work out so well. Yeah. And you're never going to bat 1,000. Like, no one's ever saying that, like, you can't make mistakes and personnel mistakes, and the best GMs and the best personnel people are the ones who can own those things, which he has. But that still doesn't mean that those things don't add up, and that isn't, you know, sitting there staring at you of not getting things right when you're trying to build this thing and get it off the ground.
Yeah, I think that that's a great transition there too, right? Because I want to talk about this in the fourth quarter, because it's the biggest conversation around the Bears right now, right? Which is Darnell Wright over Jalen Carter, making that trade back, not taking him. Jalen Carter has been an absolute monster. Darnell Wright's been okay, right? He looks like a rookie right tackle. He's got his misses. He's got his moments where you're like, Jesus, he killed that guy. And I think that that's the part where Bears fans are like, well, this guy looks elite and absolutely fixes your defense versus this guy looks okay right now and you're hoping that he's going to continue to get better. I'm okay with the decision on that, at least me personally, because you understood that you were trying to change what the commitment of this team was. Jalen Carter spells, we're going to be the same team that we've always been our entire life. We're going to go with the defense. We're going to build this thing through the defense. Let's go get Jalen Carter. Is he a gamble? Of course he's a gamble. We don't know what the heck's going on. We don't even know if he's going to play at the beginning of the year. And then everything kind of gets worked out and, you know, shoved under a rug. And all of a sudden he's out there and he's dominating. Love it. But it doesn't change the fact that the Bears are light years behind what Philly's doing. Philly already had the offense. They didn't need to go get a right tackle. You're trying to get there offensively. And I think that's the part where a lot of fans look at Darnell Wright over Jalen Carter. And like you said, they're always going to be tied together. Skaransky as well. Is that the right move? Where are you at on that decision right now?
Look, like I've said this a lot, and I'll say it again. You cannot fault Ryan Poles for trading back from 9 to 10. And yes, we will look at – if Jalen Carter goes on and has an incredible career, there will always be buyer's remorse. But he was not ever in the situation to take a gamble on somebody who was involved in a situation that claimed the lives of two people due to speeding and drinking and all of those things. And of course, besides that, which is a massive thing you have to consider, there was him showing up 20 pounds overweight to his pro day at Georgia, looking awful. And his coach is not vouching for him from Georgia. There were so many red flags with this that there was only one or two general managers in this league that had the leash that was long enough to be able to take a flyer on a guy like that. And really only one team, a team that is built on its defensive line from the inside out, the Philadelphia Eagles, four players last year at 10 plus sacks, team at 70 as a whole. Like, they had the infrastructure to insulate him, to let him go through a rookie season where he didn't have to be perfect. And yeah, I know we saw him, force two fumbles last night. He's looked like a monster out there in a good way, but the Bears did not have the setup for him. And I also question, like, I know he's a game wrecker and he's naturally incredibly talented and athletic and all these things. Do we think that this iteration of Jalen Carter in Philadelphia, who's also playing along Brandon Graham, alongside Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, like, do we think that it would have been the same here and that he would have changed, like, his, like, you know, his replacement wins above replacement stat, like looking at him, like specifically, that they would have changed the fate of this defense all that much? I don't think so. Yeah. I think that the coaching factors into that too. Like, do we know if this defense actually works in Chicago? Because we sure as hell haven't seen it on the field. They have one sack in three games. I don't know if it would have been such a stark change to Chicago's fate if they would have taken Jalen Carter at 9 and not taken Darnell Wright at 10. What I do know is that they were not ever in position to do that. The optics of it for a general manager who has not won anything, who is, you know, at that point, not even two full years into his job yet, like, there was no way. There was no way. And it's a convenient, fun talking point to play this thing out 5 years and see how well the draft picks that either team and the one after them, the Tennessee Titans, how well those guys panned out. But for right now, Bears fans can watch Monday Night Football and watch Jalen Carter do what he does and say, okay, that's great. It never would have worked here for a multitude of reasons.
Yeah, I don't know what it would have been, but I think the one thing for me is, whether Justin Fields is the answer or not, your offensive line is going to be there. The offensive line that you're trying to put together is going to – Braxton Jones will be there.
Look at how Detroit did it. They built that thing during Matthew Stafford, and they've been building it after Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, and so I think that's the number one that I want Justin to be the answer here. I believe that he has the talent. I believe that the players on his team think that he has enough of the talent, and that's why they follow him so closely. That's why he is the leader in this locker room. But there's so much that goes into, okay, you may be the guy, but if you're not, guess what? The next guy, the next rookie guy that probably is going to end up coming in there, if he's not the guy, still needs that same protection. And you can't just keep putting off building a real offensive line. We talk about why the Bailey Zappies or the Brock Purdy's are able to come in and all of a sudden have production. Why can't we have that here? It's because they get to sit back there and actually have time to make decisions.
Yeah.
I think the part that sucks the most is, right, when you look at a Nate Davis right now, when you're looking at a Darnell Wright, you see Braxton Jones on IR, Tevin Jenkins on IR. Cody White here basically being a turnstile at left guard. Lucas Patrick falling over his own feet, looking like doing his best impersonation of Sam Mustafa out there. You start to look at, okay, yes, I see these things that are in place, and I see how many of them aren't working.
Yeah.
And I give you that, but I can't fault Ryan Poles for saying, no matter what happens here, we have to have an offensive line in front of a quarterback, no matter who the quarterback is.
No, and it's a smart play. It's the one position you cannot negate, because everybody is always searching for great offensive linemen, and you should be able to look at how much other teams. Ryan Poles said this on our pregame show with Jeff Joniak. A lot of teams are struggling right now with pass protection. There was a stat from PFF today just pointing to how difficult it is. I don't believe that. You know, both offensive lines for both lines for Tampa last night did not grade out very well. And I'm trying to find the stat, because there really haven't been that many successful offensive lines so far this season.
Oh, it's been bad.
And, you know, and like the thing that like should not surprise people is that this is not just like some trend of this year. It just shows you how difficult it is to build this thing. And like, you know, Dallas was missing multiple offensive linemen from their game the other day. Here it is from Brad Spielberger from PFF. Through week three, there's only one interior offensive line with a unit grade of at least 70, and that's the Detroit Lions, which we know. It's making your point, Pat. Like, they started building that thing in 2016. Like, the adjustments that defenses are making and putting so much emphasis on rushing the passer, that's why you're seeing this thing skew to where a lot of teams right now are dealing with, you know, issues along their offensive line and being unable to protect their quarterbacks. But you can't neglect that, regardless of whether Justin Fields or any other quarterback is back there. You have to make sure that you're doing that in spite of everything else going on around you.
Yeah, I believe in how Ryan Poles is trying to build this team now, whether that happens successfully or not, right? That's always the question. But I like what he's trying to do at a minimum. And yeah, does that mean that we've had some neglected spots on the defensive side of the ball? 100%. The defensive line is basically non-existent. But I go back to when I look on the defensive end. Lance Briggs said this week one, and he's kind of said it every week here. It's just like, where's the hustle? Where's the fight? Where's the want to? And that's why we go back to that first topic of, hey, do these guys believe in Fluce? There's so many question marks on this team. I don't think that we'll have any answers for a while here. But we do got some questions from the fans out there. They love getting the insight from Courtney Crone. I think this is a good one here from Bear Season. Shout out to Bear Season tweeting in. Says, looking at Chicago's next four games, how confident are you that they can salvage the season and get back on track?
Salvage the season and, you know, turning this thing around and all of a sudden becoming a winning team are two very different things. I know this question was very pointed. Salvage the season, get back on track.
Yeah.
Like, let's go back to what my original prediction was for this team, that 7-8 wins at most is probably where the ceiling should be on a team that is definitely a year away, but right now feels like it might be a couple years away based on three games. In 2020, I covered the Minnesota Vikings, and that was Justin Jefferson's rookie year. Kirk Cousins was in his third season as the quarterback there. The defense still had a lot of star power. They ended up trading for Unique Ngakoue because they thought, okay, we're going to run this thing through. We might be pretty good. They start out 1-5. Bye week hits. They trade Ngakoue. They put Danielle Hunter, their other pass rusher, on injured reserve because he had this strange neck tweak that ended up like kind of becoming a major storyline all season. Yeah. Just popped up one day in practice. And they end up trying to contend for the playoffs that year. I believe it was the Bears who actually late that season put them out of playoff contention. It was the game up at US Bank Stadium. But there was not all hope lost after a 1-5 start. Now, with this iteration of the Bears and an 0-3 start, and then you look at the schedule, you can find, this is still difficult, you can find wins on here. Like, as much as we kind of joke about Denver giving up 70 points and that game being like such an, you know, such an insane like finish
for them last week. How the heck did you do that?
They play Denver this week at home. I know that they're 3-point underdogs right now, and that kind of tells you how Vegas feels about the Bears, but that should be a game they're competitive in. Washington just came back down to earth after facing a legitimate team. Not Denver, but they faced a really good team last week against Buffalo. That's right after them. Minnesota's also 0-3 right now, coming in week six. Like, there are games on here that they should, even if they don't win, they should be competitive in. So to get the season back on track would be facing your next four teams, Vegas included in that, and coming away from that at 2-2, 3-1. They're not going to sweep, but like, that should be a realistic expectation if you truly believe what you're being sold from the staff, that they are a well-coached team and that the coaches can make these changes, that the talent is there. Now, if you don't believe that, then you think that the seat you can throw the towel in, which I understand at this point because they have not shown you anything to believe in, especially going from like 1 week to, we knew Kansas City was going to be an uphill battle.
Nobody
in their right mind, except the little boy I sat next to on the plane going down to Arrowhead. I asked him what his score prediction was, and he told me 37-20. And I told him, wow, the Bears, if they score 37 points, it'd be the first time since 20—when's the last time we did that? 2020? No, it's been a while. Like, you get the point.
Mitch Tampa, maybe?
Yeah, like, that's what I—that was 2020, like, right? Like, 2019? Anyways, like— nobody thought they were going to go down to Kansas City and win. But now people do think, like, realistically, I know that they, you know, the sky's falling and everything sucks right now in Chicago, but they should beat Denver. But you can't really, like, hang your hat on anything until they show it to you, because this team has not looked prepared. And when they get out there, it looks like the same story on repeat, drive after drive on offense. And then on defense, they just look completely overmatched, where until you see them get win number one and snap this losing streak, I think it's fair to not buy in, because, you know, getting the season back on track could mean, okay, what position are you putting yourselves in to get yourself set up for next year? But God, that's tough, because it feels like you're hitting restart 2 years into this thing after you just did it.
Yeah. Last time Bears scored 35 plus points was 12-27-2020 versus the Jacksonville Jaguars. They won that game 41-17.
Wow.
That is not good. And here's the interesting part, right? They've scored 30 points four times since then. They've won one of those games. So, again, we're asking questions about this defense here. Shout out to Chicago Sun-Times, always chiming in with a question. Said, at what point do we have to say that the season is over? Could that be a loss this week?
Look, if you start 0-4, I mean, there's no chance. Let me back up. I never thought this team was going to be a playoff team. But if you start 0-4, like, that is like the easiest way to write that off. And maybe fans need that to kind of come back to reality. But I think most fans are already there. It's hard, like, when the losing streak is now in double digits and it's been in double digits, like, if you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, because if they lose to Denver, it's kind of like a flipping my argument I just made of, okay, if they lose to Denver, God, they're going to lose to Washington, they're going to lose to Minnesota, they're going to lose to the Raiders. Like,
who can you beat?
Yeah, that's it. That's it right there. Like, because if you lose to like one of the worst teams in football after coming off playing one of the best teams in football, then who can you beat? And, you know, I go back to 2020. I mean, that one felt over from the first 5-6 weeks into the season. But for a young team like this and a coaching staff that more or less just got here, same with the front office staff, you can't afford to have this thing completely shut down more or less and like giving up on the season by the halfway point here. I did this exercise last week after the Tampa Bay game. Like, all right, if this thing really, if Justin is not the guy, if you have to find a window for a quarterback change, which again, nuclear option, I don't think that they do it anytime soon. They certainly do not want to do that. What's your window? Okay, well, you look at the bye week. Bye week's in week 13. Not a great time for this team for a reset and for anything like that. It would have to be after the Carolina game, which is that Thursday night game at Soldier Field in week 9. I still think that would be a very difficult move for them to pull off, but you've got to be looking, if this thing continues on with a lot of losses, you've got to be looking at where they have breaks in the schedule to either try to do something different or try to make personnel changes.
I think at that point we'll have what I would like to call full on internal war, because a lot of times coaches like to save their skin and show it's not me. Mm-hmm. If we get to that point, I mean, you're talking about possibly benching Fields. I don't think Poles will let them bench Fields, which will then turn into the full on internal warfare. Let's hope we don't get there, Bears fans. That's all I'll say at the end of it, because if we get to that point, right, I think that you're going to see a full-on clean house on one side of the ball. And that's not my hope for this team at all. But, hey, we'll see. We got a lot more to break down here with this Denver team. We'll continue that throughout the week. Me and J-Mac will be live tomorrow after Matt Eberflus speaks, reacting to his comments and talking about what this team needs to do. There's a lot to go, long way to go here, Courtney.
There is. We're only 3 weeks in, and feels like we're 13 weeks in.
I wish we were 13 weeks in. I have so much more. No, but at the end of the day, I do want to say this. Appreciate all of you guys, Courtney, you two, for supporting me as I lost my grandfather. That sucked. It was really hard. And it's one of those things where when you got to go, it's weird, like, when you work as much as we do, when somebody's like, no, you need to, like, take a day and, like, actually deal with this to actually have to do it. So I appreciate you guys for supporting me through yesterday. And we're going to keep moving along. We're going to keep pushing, and I'm going to keep honoring him by continuous success. He kind of was like, he didn't really understand a lot the last 7 months when I would go talk to him. He'd have his moments, but he knew four letters, ESPN. And when I told him I started working at ESPN, he just looked at me and smiled. So it was really cool to be able to accomplish as much as I have while he was alive. And I appreciate everybody for keeping this thing going, man. Love you guys. Love all you guys. Everybody who reached out, Waddle, Sylvie, everybody, man. So Carmen, there was so much support. So thank you guys. And that's enough for the emotional part of the show. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Bear down. And let's hope to God we beat Denver, because the one thing that made it worse was we got beat 41-10. Like, come on. You could have sent them off with a win, Bears. Let's get them done. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Peace.